The boys and the family yesterday were trying to nip in and out of town between the showers, and we managed it. We managed to get in and get out before we got wet. One of our jobs was to go to the toy shop. Daniel wanted to spend his pocket money in the toy shop. Why he needed to go shopping, I have no idea. Not in the rain. Why he needed to go shopping a week after his birthday, I have no idea. There were more presents in the house than enough. He doesn't need to go shopping at all, but, Daddy, I want to go and spend my pocket money. So we went to the toy shop. What are you after, Daniel? Don't know. How much have you got to spend? Don't know. I walked into the shop, and typical toy shop, full of all sorts of things, all sorts of items, boys, girls, younger and older, all sorts of prices from £1 right up to scandalous prices for toys. We walked round. Thankfully, the scandalous prices he wasn't looking at. We just walked round. And this sort of don't-know kind of boy walked round this you-can-have-anything-you-want kind of shop. And we managed to get a reasonable gift for a reasonable amount of money that put a big smile on his face. So it was all very relaxed, all very easy. Shopkeepers didn't really care if this little boy went out happy or not. It's a job. It was all very, well, it doesn't really matter. On his part and on the shop's part. But in contrast, God's messenger cries to you, you need one thing, and it is on offer, and it's free. Do you get it? Do you understand? Ho, everyone who thirsts. That's singular, everyone. You, if you're thirsty, applies to you. If you're thirsty, it applies to you. And the first come of line two is plural. There's enough for you and there's enough for everyone. But it's a cry that is said with the certainty that you need what is on offer. You must have this. It's not a shop you can go in and just decide whatever you want. You must have this. Come to the waters. We've been looking at Sunday mornings at John 6 for the last few weeks. We looked today where Jesus stands up in the Feast of Tabernacles on that last great day and cries out, come to me, all you who are thirsty, come to the living waters. And that's a cry from the eternal Son of God to those who are outside of him to come in. For those who do not know him, to know him. And some of you have expressed enjoyment at those passages. Some of you have expressed delight again in the words of Jesus when we've looked at those passages together. And rightly so. But I have a question for you, Christian. It's on the notice sheet. But you don't need to look. It's just one word. You satisfied? Satisfied? Are you satisfied? We can hear great promises from Jesus Christ. And we know they're true. We can pray for those who are not yet belonging to Jesus Christ, that they would come in faith to him. And we should pray. But I wonder, are we really satisfied with Jesus Christ? Or is there a creeping discontent? Is there a burden that feels heavier than any peace or joy Christ brings? Is there a love for something else that outshines Jesus? That can happen, can it? It shouldn't, but it can. You see, what Jesus offers here, or what the words of this prophet, echoed by Jesus later, offers here is nothing short of exuberant, abundant, filling, satisfying, not just things, but himself. Life through God. And it's offered in unashamed abundance. Let's look at verse 1 together. Three times calls out, come. Come to the waters. There's a need. You're thirsty. Come. The second time, it's not just about there's a need provided for, but actually it's provided for freely. You see that? You who have no money, come, buy and eat. It doesn't quite compute, does it? If you walk into a shop and say, I've got no cash, but I want that. You'll walk out with nothing in your hands. But here, come, buy and eat. You don't need money. And you know, don't you, Christian, that it's God who has to give. That's what made you a Christian in the first place, isn't it? That's possibly what drew some of you, that it was free. That actually you realised that you couldn't bring anything. So there's a need, thirst that's supplied for, there's water. There's a need that is freely supplied. You have no money, doesn't matter, come, buy and eat. But it's not just supplied for freely, it's supplied for richly. Look what comes next. Come, buy wine, joy, and milk, richness, without money, without price. You need this? It's on offer. It's on offer freely. It's full for you. Come and have it. If that is the invitation for people to come to God through Jesus Christ, why is it we can be dissatisfied? I'm not saying I see dissatisfied people all over the place, but I know your hearts because it's like mine. And I know the Christian life because we've lived it, many of us together. And there are times when we couldn't describe our Christian life as bursting with the abundance and the enjoyment of God through Jesus Christ. So as we look at this passage this evening, set your heart to attention. Listen. And ask yourself, what's on offer? Are these things being enjoyed by me, by us? I know they should be. And I know often they are. But are they today? Have they been just even the last 2 days? And I warn you, Christian family, events may well happen this week, and you'll find yourself distracted, downhearted, and the joy of being a Christian can be snatched so quickly and so easily. You may have to come back to this passage and the God of this passage this week. Prepare your hearts for what is yet unknown. There is this feast that is offered. It's not just water to drink. There's wine and there's milk. And listen how he describes it. Verse 2. See the second half of verse 2? Listen carefully to me and eat. What is good? There's food on offer. And let your soul delight itself in abundance. This is not greed at work. This is God just abundantly supplying all that we need and unashamedly offering it in wonderful terms. Can I ask you, has the freeness and the fullness of the blessings of being a Christian, the knowledge of Jesus Christ, the fatherhood of God, the indwelling of God's Spirit, is that like a feast? Do you know yourselves to be satisfied deeply, richly? your soul delighting itself in abundance. That's massive, isn't it? The freeness of the gospel, the freeness of the relationship with God through Jesus Christ is a marvel, isn't it? That we can and must bring nothing but our need. Can I remind you of how you've had to come to God? Sometimes when the joy and the delight in God is lost, we need to be reminded of some very simple things. Can I remind you of how you've had to come to God? In utter need, in complete dependence, and his utter provision towards you. We've sang it, haven't we? Now you needy, come and welcome God's free bounty, glorify true belief and true repentance, every grace that brings you nigh. Without money, come to Jesus Christ and buy. Sometimes when we become Christians, for some of us, our stories, we knew exactly what was happening. And it felt like a purchase. We were unloading our burden and we were getting a light yoke. For most of us, as we've grown in the Christian lives, we've appreciated the freeness again and again and again, haven't we? We've enjoyed the fullness of God freely. And we've been reminded again and again, and we've been humbled and brought low, but delightfully so. There's nothing we've brought. Can I remind you of how you've had to come to God with nothing in your hands but need? It could be that if joy and peace and love towards God is absent or cold or neglected, you need to not come again to be saved by God, but come back to your Saviour. And acknowledge that unless he gives, you've got nothing. Unless he gives graciously, you will have nothing. Allow him to give. Part of that journey is often to acknowledge that the way we choose for ourselves, like this morning with the children, the lost sheep, the way we choose for ourselves just ends in disaster. Come with empty hands to a God who knows your need, provides for it. To a God who freely provides for it and richly provides for it, expecting your soul to delight in what he gives. There is a feast. It's full and it's free. Before we move on to the next aspect, can I just highlight to you verse 2, the first half. Here is the fool, who does not come empty-handed to enjoy what God gives. Here is the fool who tries to buy something else. Why do you spend your money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? Once upon a time, that was you, wasn't it? That's exactly how you were living. You were trying to get joy, peace, happiness. You were trying to get it. That feeling. And may I remind you, Christian, that our loved ones who are outside of Christ, and verse 2 is a piercingly accurate summary of what their lives are like before God. There is a feast on offer. It's full and it's free. And yet in foolishness we have in the past and others do in today, ignore the offer that is there. I draw your attention to verses 6 through to 11 now. This offer is available, like in most shops, for a limited time only. Seek the Lord, listen carefully, while he may be found. That's sobering, isn't it? Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. When you came to God, it was everything about you that you had to leave behind. You see that in verse 7? Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. The way you were going, the way you were living, and the very things you were thinking. These things, both of them, have to come under the authority of God. And the call is very simple, isn't it? Seek, call, return, verse 7, to the Lord. Return to the Lord. For some of us, it was a massive shock, wasn't it? That there was sin in our lives that needed forgiving. That we were held by God, guilty before him. And unless we received this abundant gift, unless we came and was put right through Jesus Christ, we would remain guilty before him. It was a shock to many of us that there was sin to forgive, wasn't it? But isn't that a delight that there's not just sin to forgive, there is also forgiveness for sin. Grace have taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. God helps you to see you're guilty, and he will deal with the guilt. Come to him. And that's what he says in verse 7. Return to the Lord, and he will have mercy on him. To our God, and he will abundantly pardon. You see the certainty of that promise? You see the clarity of that? If you come to God, there is forgiveness of sin. If you come to God, there is mercy. Abundant pardon. One of the reasons, Christian, listen carefully. One of the reasons why we struggle in our Christian lives is because mercy doesn't mean much and abundant pardon hasn't quite registered. Abundant pardon we translate in our hearts and minds to mean a light let off. And God can still at some point be angry with us, hold us accountable in his wrath for our sin. That's not what abundant pardon means. When Christ, as we sang, cries, "It is finished," God's wrath is dealt with. And the abundant pardon, to the extent to which he suffers, is the extent to which God forgives. Christ has suffered completely and done the job. God the Father is able and willing to lavishly pardon abundantly. Some of us in our Christian lives, from time to time, and some of us more often than others, are troubled by a conscience that accuses us of being beyond the reach of God's love and mercy. So let me repeat to you what he says. When we return to our God, he will abundantly pardon. Do you get that? Are you listening? There is no measure with the forgiveness that God gives. As far as the east is from the west, he declares. There's no further distance possible. And that is how he has dealt with us. boys and girls, there are a few of you present tonight. I want you to listen carefully for a few moments. Sometimes when we're growing up in a church like this, we think that somehow that puts us in a good spot with God. That somehow He smiles upon us. It's good to come to church. It's very good to come to church. But the Bible's very clear that whether we sit in church or whether we don't come, we're all in the same position. We all need God to forgive us. We all need to come to God because inside we're sick. And we need God to forgive us, to put us right, to make us well. And these verses tell us that He will. He will do it. When we come to Him, He will do it. Those of you who are slightly older than the age of 11, you can think that coming to church means that you're in good terms with God as well. And those of you who are Christians can think that coming to church puts you in good terms with God. And it's a good thing to do. But listen, what puts us on good terms with God is when we value who He is and what He has done. When we understand and appreciate the grace of God and the mercy of God to us. Some of you may struggle with the idea that God can abundantly pardon. Well, this is His explanation. I don't think like you think. Verse 8. See that? The way my mind thinks is different from the way your mind thinks. So stop thinking as if you're God. You're not. It stands to reason that God will forgive sin when it's God who's doing the reasoning. In Isaiah chapter 1, He promises that even though the darkness and the dye and the filth of our sin is deep, it'll be transformed completely. A crimson, scarlet, white, pure. That's God's reasoning. Now, if I'm honest, I still don't understand it. But I'll take it. And I would plead with you. You may not understand it. He doesn't ask you to understand it. He invites you to receive. It's a massive difference. So God doesn't think like you do. So much so that the heavens are higher than the earth. That's how far His thoughts are from yours. So very different. So listen to Him when He says that He will abundantly pardon. I've tried to remind you of how you had to come to God empty-handed, receiving a free gift. I want to remind you in these verses that you have had to come to God as you are, just as you are, but not to stay as you are. You've had to come to God knowing that He has to change you completely. Wanting that He would change you completely. There's a feast, verses 1 to 5. There's a return. That's what you've had to come back to God. And you know what it's like, don't you? The story of the prodigal son who has done everything he can to isolate himself from his father, everything he can to cut himself off, everything he can to insult his dad and take everything he has. It's all gone. And when he comes back, the father does everything he can to communicate that this man is back in the family again. The ring, the sandals, the robe, the feast, the calling him my son, the insistence that it's right to rejoice with the other son, the throwing of the party, the whole lot. You know that when you turn to God, that He received you. How can you not be satisfied? with a God like that. A God who embraced you in all your filth and guilt and mess. A God who is, even today, patient, loving, gracious. In all the complications of your lives, in all the delicacies and failures that are veiled from others, God embraces you in that. How can you not be satisfied in that God? I want to fast forward then to verses 12 and 13, if I can. There's a feast, there's a return. Lastly, very simply, there's a renewal. There's a renewal, a restoration or a renewal that God promises to a people who were once slaves and were led out, rescued. He says, you shall go out with joy. The going out is slavery set free. You're set free now, you can go. But it's not just go where you want. They're led out in peace. Joy is inner. Peace is exterior. The relationship is resolved between them and God, but joy is inside. They're led out. They shall go out. But it's not just the people that God's dealing with, is it? It's a strange image in verse 12. The mountains and the hills shall break forth into singing before you. The trees of the field shall clap their hands. What on earth is that about? God has promised to fix everything. And as he deals with your sin in your life with abundant pardon, as he receives you and all your filth and your guilt, he's going to fix everything. And the scriptures talk about a new heaven and a new earth being the permanent home of the family of God. And that permanent home is going to be made perfect. And creation currently, in Romans, groans under the weight of the curse, will one day rejoice, sing and clap under the force and the beauty and the majesty of the renewal and restoration that God will bring. That's what Isaiah is talking about. One day God's going to sort it out so much that creation itself will rejoice. That as you go out into freedom, you're led out by your new commander or captain, creation itself will rejoice. And those things that speak of curse, the thorn and the briar, shall be replaced by the cypress tree and the myrtle tree. A little bit of ink spilled over those verses. Permanent evergreen. The curse, the thorn, is going to be made permanently beautiful and green. Complete restoration. And as much as you will enjoy it, and as much as it will be good for you, the focus will be God. You see that last two lines? It shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. Never again will God's good creation be spoiled like it was first. This perfect creation will be permanent. And the focus and the praise and the enjoyment will be in what he gives, but also in himself. He will be the center. There will one day be a renewal, which means that our grief and our sorrow here on earth, while real and forceful, is temporary and will one day be replaced. Not with forgetfulness of what this world has been like, but with joy that God has completed what he has set out to do. It means that the aches and pains of this life, the real burdens and sorrows, can be trusted to him. Every single one. Even the frustration of living with a Christian family. It'll all be resolved into perfection. He's going to renew the whole lot. Now then, do you like the prospect of that? that sound good? These words only come from the lips of the eternal God who has sent Jesus into the world. That's the only source of these words coming true. And Christian, that's your Father in heaven who speaks like this. That is his family destiny that he's sharing with you. And you will go out with joy. You will be led forth in peace, and creation itself will applaud and rejoice as the Lord is its center. How can you not be satisfied in a God like that? Hey? I know the burdens of this world get to us. I understand that. But come on. Isn't that a prospect and a half? Everything that causes us sorrow, even the things that we don't know how God is going to resolve, but he promises he will. It's all going to be sorted perfectly in his goodness and wisdom. How can you not be satisfied in a God like that? God calls people to him that their souls, our souls, may delight in abundance. One day it'll come true, and you won't need people like me telling you to rejoice and remember how good your God is, because you'll never be able to forget. But for now, let me remind you, your God is the satisfier, the deep satisfier of your soul. And it is a shame to us if we don't delight in him. And it is a glory to him when we do. Christian, delight in your God. Rest in his goodness. And allow yourself to be satisfied in him again.